mouth to bring sight to the blind man and sound to the left child. We will survive in this country wilderness. Swimming through the waters of Babylon like a rebel fish. Journalist, specialist, critical and survivalist. Spitting heaven fire from his lips. Burn a slave driver.
Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, New Media for the New Millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." We as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And with all that getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the home page, and catch the live stream from that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening, and the live stream is playing there. You can go to ourradionetwork.com. Again, that's ourradionetwork.com. They broadcast out of the Black Belt, and you can catch the live stream there. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. And in that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon, and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you have the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for an Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you'll always see interesting content being posted daily. And do me a favor before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook. And Time for an Awakening Media is there. Always full of the latest podcasts of the various programs on Time for an Awakening Media. Articles that you can download, listen at later times, or even share with your friends. And products in Time for Awakening shopping area in our partnership with the BB Toomey. Check it out. Make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. Tonight, we have another special guest joining us in our history of Time for an Awakening, of reaching out and doing what we can to aid our farmers. We have another one of our farmers that's on this evening. It was an interesting article that I put on Time for an Awakening page about a week and a half ago in reference to our guest this evening, Mr. John Ingram, African-American farmer and activist in Mississippi. And he's going to let our listening audience know about the struggles that African-American farmers is having in the Black Belt and in Mississippi, in particular with some of the nation's top poultry producers. This Koch Food is one of them that's systematically driving African-American farmers out of business and eventually off their land. We'll talk about that this evening with our special guest, Mr. John Ingram, and we'll be right back to get the program started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies,
thank you.
Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And before we get started with our program this evening and introduce our special guest, let me welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch Street. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. It seems like a slow Sunday evening, but I'm once again, you know, definitely interested in how do we, you know, not just identify, but, you know, create some resolution to, you know, looking at the challenges Black farmers are going through in the various areas. And how do we all can be supportive and helpful, not just about information, but about really providing this experience to keep going.
you know, before I introduce our guest this evening, I just want to reiterate, because we have talked about it. We talked about it when Thomas Burrell was on. We talked about it 2 weeks ago, or last week, I think, when Mr. Slaughter called the program, who was one of the named plaintiffs in that Pickford versus Glickman lawsuit, that, you know, this thing need to be in the forefront of our people's minds. The challenges that we face in this country and in this society of racism and white supremacy is multifaceted. It's not just one area. And we really need to focus in on not only the problems, but the solution to these things.
Mm.
It's some of the things that that the farmers has expressed, especially the named plaintiffs in that Pickford versus Glickman, is that these issues that the black farmers had against USDA, which is the federal government, has never been resolved. They ran a campaign during the Obama administration that black farmers had been satisfied, that $1.5 million had been given and everything was all right. But it was never all right with the black farmers in reference to this. And this discrimination and systematically squeezing black farmers and running them off their land is still going on. It hasn't been addressed. So, you know, we talked about it with the Stein Seed Company selling black farmers fake seed, soybean seed. Mm-hmm. Now, here we go with another case, and I'm going to bring my guests on. But before I do, let me just read a little something. I want our listening audience to pay close attention to this, because this company that we're going to talk about this evening is not a mom and pop run-of-the-mill company. This is a billion-dollar company, one of the largest in this country, called Cook Foods. It's spelled K-O-C-H, but it's pronounced Cook. And let me read this. Cook Food is based outside of Chicago and supplies chicken, and often sold under other brands to major restaurants, major retailers such as Burger King, Kroger's, Walmart. So this company is doing major business around the country, selling chicken to a lot of different places. Our people run the Popeyes, they run the KFC. Our people consume a lot of chicken from a lot of these companies. So I want to bring our guest on to talk about his experience with this multi-billion-dollar company, and he's not going to speak for himself. It's a lot of other black farmers that this has happened to, and I want to bring on our guest this evening to talk about this, Mr. John Ingram. Mr. Ingram, how are you, sir?
I am good. How you doing, Elliot?
I'm doing great. I'm glad to have you on Time for Awakening with myself and Brother Richard.
How you doing? How you doing there, Mr. Ingram?
Yes, sir. I'm doing good.
Mr. Ingram, before you talk about your experience with this Cook Foods, to talk about yourself a little bit. I've seen from the article that you used to be a deputy in your town, and you managed a car dealership. But when you got out of that or retired or whatever, got out of the business, you bought a farm 50 miles east of Jackson, Mississippi, that you plan to raise horses and leave the land to your son. Talk about not only the genesis of that, but how you managed to get into the poultry business.
Well, I served 10 years in the military. I was in the United States Army for 10 years. And when I got out of the service, I joined the local sheriff department there. And I worked there under the sheriff department. And started working a car dealership there in the local community in Forest.
Mm-hmm.
I end up acquiring some land that that's about 40, 50 miles away from Jackson there. And I bought the land. It was a property that had been foreclosed on, and I bought the property to raise horses on. And the property had three chicken houses on it, but I wasn't interested in growing chickens. I was going to take those chicken houses and convert them over to barn for horses.
Mm-hmm.
So one day at work, one of Cook Food representative came to me, and he wanted to know if I owned that property. And I told him, yes, I did. And he said, what are you planning on doing with those chicken houses? I said, well, I'm going to plan on turning them over into a barn. And he says, well, you know, chicken business is a big business, and you can make a lot of money just using them as chicken houses. So I said, I'm not really interested in that. And so he came back and showed me what I could make and what I could do. And I said, well, what do I need to do to get started in this business? And he said, nothing, just say you want the chickens. And that's how I got started. And but after I got started, it was a whole different operation. And they, you know, I grew a few batches of chickens, and then they came and told me I had to spend $20,000-$30,000 to upgrade this. And so I did that. And then they told me I'd do $30,000-$40,000 to upgrade this. And I did that. And I ended up putting almost $200,000 into that place to grow those chickens. And then after a while, they started. What we do is when you grow the chickens, you get what you call out time. That's to get the houses ready for a new batch of chickens. And as I talked to some of the other growers, they told me that that's what the success was in the chicken business, if you have a short out time. You know, when you get the chickens out, you grow. I mean, you get the houses ready, and you get ready for the next batch of chickens in somewhere around anywhere between 14 and 21 days. And that's how you made the money in the chicken business. So, and they started out, I was doing that, and but then they started to. I noticed that they started to make my out time further apart. And it went from 14 days to 21 days to 30 days to 35 days. And what happens when the longer your out time is, the less money you make in the chicken business. And it got to where sometimes we was out of chickens, you know, 2 and 3 months at a time.
Now, Ms. Singer, let me go back. Now, once you got started in the relationship with Cook Foods, I guess they told you the things that you would need and different regulations and things of that nature. And maybe USDA came and made sure that you were up to code or standard. You can correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Now, once they came out and inspected and made sure that you had everything that's up to government standards that Cook Foods said that you needed, how are they coming back telling you, well, you need, because I read some of the things about you need to move this power line, you need more lighting, you need this, you need that. And people were telling you 2 and 3 different things. What? Give us a little rundown on some of the things that they kept coming back and not really nickel and diming, because this was thousands of dollars that you had to put out. So,
yeah, they had started to when they started to increase my out time, I started to inquire with other growers. The first thing I did is I went to talk to some other black growers and to find out, you know, what was this normal procedure.
Mm-hmm.
And I come to find out that there was only 4 black growers with the company. There was only 4. And so I went around to some of the white farms and inquired about that, and I noticed that they wasn't doing some of the things that they was requiring us to do. And so I said, well, maybe, but those
now, wait, farms, now hold it a second, Mr. Ingrid. You said that when you inquired around the white growers, that they didn't require them to do things that they were requiring the black growers to do.
Well, yes, but I at the time, I assumed it was because our farm was smaller.
Okay.
But most of those farms were larger farms, and our farm was smaller farms. And I said, well, maybe it's because of the size of our farm. And I didn't put it was at that point that it was any kind of racial deal until I got they had a representative came in, and he told me, he says, I needed to put lights down the center of my house so that the baby chicks could start off faster. And I understood that. I said, well, maybe that would, because, you know, they could see better. They could see to get the feed better and all this. So they told me to do this, and it cost $6,000.
Mm-hmm.
So I went on ahead and did that. Well, about where the next batch of chickens, which is, you know, sometime is 6 to 8 weeks, the next batch of chickens, they had a different representative coming to the farm, totally different guy from the other guy. And he told me, he says, why do you only have these houses, these lights down the center of the chicken house? And I said, well, the last guy told me I had to put them down the center of the chicken house so the baby chicks can start out better. Because, you know, when the baby chicks first come, they're only in the half of the house.
Mm-hmm.
And then you turn them out after they 14 days, you turn them out to the whole house. So he says, I don't like the way you got them lights. I want them at the whole house. And that's when I really started to realize that there was a problem. And it went from that to my power line was too close to the feed bin. I had to move the power line, which was $27,000. But the power line, you got to keep in mind that the farm had been there like 20 years, and the power line had been in the same place the whole 20 years, but it wasn't owned by a black guy. And so all of a sudden the power line had to be moved, and then you had to put new curtains on and had to put new feeders on, and it just went one thing after the other one. And so it just got to where I just couldn't keep up with it. It was just, you know, I had done went and borrowed $200,000 to put into this thing. So the only choice I had was try to keep going. And and so it just went on. And then when I went to the other growers, I got to talking to some of the other growers, the other four black growers that they had at the time, they was telling them the same identical thing. And so what I did is I told them, I said, look, I said, it's something going on here. I said, it's, you know, I don't know what it is, but it seemed like it's discrimination to me. And I said, but what I want y'all to do is not to tell anybody that we're talking. Don't let anybody know that we're communicating with each other. And I said, because I think they're trying to pick us off one at a time. Well, the first black grower that left got out, they just told him what he had to do, and he just couldn't afford to do it. And he said, man, I just can't afford to do it. And he just went out quick.
Now, did he, the one black grower that was the first to kind of fall, did he lose his land?
No, he didn't lose his land because, see, what he did is he refused to do all those upgrades that they wanted him to do.
Oh, so he wasn't as deep, he wasn't in as deep.
Exactly.
Okay.
And he had the debt load that we had.
Okay.
And so he bailed out. He was the only one that actually still got his place. And then they had Mr. Sanders that was in the article with me. He had a brother, and so I went to his brother they had told him he had to do so much stuff, and he couldn't afford to do it either. And they ended up foreclosing on his farm.
Oh,
keep in mind what they was doing was they would give you. What they was doing was trying to force us out, and they would give us a demand of stuff that we had to do, and they know we couldn't do it, and it just kept us getting deeper and deeper in debt. Well, now you got to go back to this bank, and then this bank is telling you that you know, I need a letter from them saying that if I give you this loan, that they would, you know, they would keep bringing you chickens. Well, they were giving you these demands, but they wouldn't give you the letter that you needed for the bank. So you couldn't make payments on the farm. You couldn't make the loan notes that you already had. And so it sort of had you in a catch-22. and I had embarked so much money against my farm that I just couldn't see a way out, you know. And so I told Mr. Sanders, this was, which was Carter's brother, that the one that was in the article. I said, we got to do something. And man, we wrote letters to everybody.
Now, let me stop you periodically, Mr. Ingram, because I want to ask you some questions for clarity for our audience. And I want to go back because I want to read something that was in that article. It says that Mississippi, your state, is the fifth largest poultry producing state with more than 1,300 chicken farms and a population of 38% black. And it mentioned here that only 96 of those farms are owned by African Americans. But what you're saying, Mr. Ingram, that it was only four of those companies that was left standing at the time when you're talking about, right?
Well, see, it was out of the 1,300 growers, that's with all the companies.
Okay.
That's with all the companies together. But out of with cooked food, there was only four.
Four. Okay. Now, the state is 38% black. You just mentioned to our listening audience that you wrote letters to everybody. Now, you have black elected officials in the state of Mississippi. A lot of the people, if they didn't come off of farms, they might have been one or two generations removed from a farm. So they should have had some type of closeness with you and your situation. Did you get any help from these elected officials? I'm talking about substantial help, not just lip service, in reference to the discrimination going on with this company.
That's all I have gotten was lip service. You know, I went to a meeting over in Decatur, Alabama. I sat on a panel, and at that meeting, we had Attorney General Eric Holder. We had USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack.
What year was this, Mr. Ingram?
This was in 2010.
Okay.
Okay. And it had from the Department of Justice, Christine Barney. We had a lot of top officials from Washington, D.C. and sat on that panel and talked about some of the issues that was going on. And they assured us that they was going to try to help us. And Christine Barney from the Department of Justice, she told me, she said, if anybody retaliate against you from sitting on this panel, because I was the only black grower that sat on the panel, that had the nerve to stand up and sit on the panel. She said, if anybody discriminate against you or retaliate against you from coming over here sitting on this panel, she said, you call me. She gave me a phone number. And when I got back to Mississippi, the same day I got back, there was a note on my door from Cook Food, and was basically telling me, you know, that I was done. And I tried to call her. I tried to write her. Never got a response.
Richard, I want you to jump in here, but wait a minute, because I want you to go back over what you just said, Mr. Ingram. But before you do that, the type of things you were going through, I seen in the article that you went to one of the top representatives, I think, in Cook Foods at the time in your state to tell him about some of your grievances and things that they were requiring of you. And it says something in the article that the guy said, I dealt with people like you before. And you said something about, what do you mean? Tell our listening audience about that interaction.
Well, what he did is when I was talking to him, you know, he told me, he said, I said, this is exactly what I said. I said, tell me what I am doing wrong. I said, you know, because it's something bigger than just me growing these chickens. I said, there seems like you got a problem with me. And I said, tell me what am I doing wrong so we can correct this problem. We two men, we can just correct these problems or whatever we need to do to get this correct, because all I want to do is grow chickens. And he said, I had some of you when I was at Sanderson Farms. I had some of you when I was at Sanderson Farm, and y'all just lazy. And I said, who is y'all? What do you mean by that statement? And he never responded.
Richard, go ahead.
You know, I wanted to get clarity, Mr. Ingram. Cook Foods, the farmer's relationship to the company, is that kind of, is that a contractual agreement that you make with the company as far as to be the chicken growers for them?
Yes, yes, we have a contract. See the contract, what the contract done, and that's one of the biggest issues that they had, is that one of the contracts that we have, and the contract it says that they have a contract to grow chickens. Okay, but what they do is they you have to meet these guidelines to get the chickens. In other words, you got to have the earth wind speed to a certain wind speed or whatever, and then and they'll use that as a tactic to delay you from getting the chickens. And in other words, to hold you out. And so what happens is, when you sell a batch of chickens, you don't get the check. The check go directly to the bank.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and the bank get their part out of it, and they give you whatever is left. Okay,
right.
So and what you do is the bank set your payments up based on the average number of chickens, which is anywhere from 6 to 7 batches a year. So they set your payments up on that, and consistent with the way you get chickens. Well, if you're supposed to be getting chicken every 21 days, or if you get your out time is 21 days, they increase that to 30 days.
Right. You're missing the payment.
Yeah, you missed that payment. So then the bank started be looking for that money. And then it goes on, then the next one, and your out time, then you're getting 7 batches of chicken a year, you're getting 4. So now you're 3 payments behind. And so that's how they forced us out.
I can see this, and I don't want to equate it to something historical yet, but let me see if I can, because is the bank a national bank or a state bank or a local bank, you know, in the sense of the relationship that the bank has with, how you say it? I keep saying I have Cochins, but it's the poultry company.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Is it a local bank, or is it a state bank, or is it a national bank that has this relationship with Cook?
At the time, it was just local banks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It was the local banks.
And the reason I think that we should understand, you know, as this, because I feel, you know, the challenge that they created for you, Now, it was only 4 black chicken farms in the area, and y'all were all like on the same kind of scheduling as far as development of your farm, in the sense of that the equipment that was needed and the length of time. I would take it you were like the last newbie as a chicken farmer that had the ability to put the farm operation together, or were you in relationship to the other three? You came in at a different time.
I came in at a different time. What happened is I was really the newbie in the chicken business, because these guys, the other guys, had been in it for years.
Okay.
And when I came in, you know, I just sort of got, you know, put in, and but like Mr. Sanders, they had been doing it like 20-some years.
Okay.
And so that's how I started to know. Because I didn't know if the stuff they were doing to me was normal. And so when I got with them, they started saying, no, this ain't the way it used to be when we was with this company, this way it was, and this and that. But what really showed the discrimination part on our behalf was when they assigned this representative, it was the same representative, the same guy. And he took each one of us out. The same exact guy. He was, you know, they have this thing they call them service reps. What they is, they call, some people call them chicken doctors or whatever. And what they do is they come by your farm once or twice a week, and they check your farm. They check the condition of your chicken, your temperature and all that stuff, and your feed and all that stuff. Make sure you're doing what you're supposed to do to grow these chickens, because you got to keep in mind, on my farm, I had like 66,000 chickens. All right, and then, and on Mr. Sanders' farm, he probably had 200,000 chickens. So this guy comes by every week, and he sees if you're doing what you're supposed to do. Well, this guy, he just had issues. Like he wouldn't when he come by, he wouldn't talk to you, or he'd just come to your farm, he'd show up on your farm, he wouldn't hardly talk to you. And so what I did is when they deliver my feed, I didn't know when they deliver my feed, so I put me an alarm on my gate. So when that truck came through my gate, it alarmed in my house. So, and I would jump on the four wheeler and run down there to the thing and just make them talk to me. And so then when me and these other black farmers got together, and I was telling them, I said, look, guys, this is what they're doing to me. And then come to find out that he was the same guy was going to their farm, the same service representative, the same chicken doctor, as they call him. He was their representative too. Because, see, you know, they have, you know, hundreds of representatives. But this one guy was, he just so happened to be all four of our service rep. And he was doing each one of us the same way. So I told him, I said, what are you going to do? Is he going to take us out one at a time? And this is how he's going to do it. And I told him all the way up to Mr. Carlton, who just got put out, I told him exactly what was going to happen, and he did every one of us exact same way. Even to the point when the Department of Justice came down and investigated this thing all the way down to now, keep in mind that the other three growers was out, including me. We had done lost our place. And Mr. Sanders was the only one we had left, and everybody was trying to support him to keep his, you know, place going. And so when the Department of Justice came down and investigated, and Mr. Sanders had, they had got him so off track with the bank like they did me, you know, with the out time between the chickens, that he was so far behind that the bank, you know, the banks were saying, hey, we just going to foreclose.
Is this the same bank, or is it a different bank? Did each one of y'all deal with a different bank, or y'all dealt with the same bank?
Each one of us had a different bank.
But all of them in Mississippi, or within that area, that geographical area. There's a couple of questions. I'm trying to paint for the listening audience, not just the personal experience that, but the structural relationships that exist. Because what you're saying is that the Cook Farm representative is really kind of setting up. Because the person that gets the land is the bank, not the Cook Farm. So right. It doesn't even make sense that Cook Farm would want to have farmers, and in particular, if we didn't have, I mean, I have to say, we know race and is always the bottom line with landowners, black landowners in the South. And we know we can see the history of this continuous pattern. So what, it shows a relationship, because not only are they not getting they're not bothering the white farmers, as you call it, you know, increasing their out time, and they're able to make those loan agreements, but they're doing this to black farmers. So the company is working in relationship to the bank. I mean, somebody could assume based off of that, because the bank gets the land, not the company.
Right.
Am I right with that?
Right. That's right.
And so, and the amount of But now you were saying you were producing 60,000 chickens. So that production amount, somebody else, some other chicken farm picks up that and won't be a black one if they're actually purchasing from all. So that increases the revenue for those white farmers in that area who have agreements with Cook Company. Would that hold to reason?
That's exactly right. See, I couldn't really understand why or what reason that they would have to do what they did to us, but what I did is I tried to go to a different bank, and then this one I really knew that I had an issue. I went to, because when my farm got so far behind, and I went to a different bank, had a bank agreeing to do business with me, and so I went to that bank and so the bank required a letter from Cook Foods to say, hey, if we loan him the money, because I'm going to get them to pay off the other bank so they can keep them foreclosing on the property. Mm-hmm. So the bank needed a letter, said, if I give him this loan, y'all going to continue to give him chickens? And they gave me a letter. It took me a while to get a letter from them. But the letter said, Mr. Ingram is a chicken grower with Cook Foods. His contract will end on a certain day.
Mm. So that made sure that you wouldn't get money from that bank.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Ingram, the you mentioned in the just before Richard asked you his question about you putting an alarm on your gate when they came in. Let me reflect back on this article, because I want you to talk about it with the listening audience. Two things that stated in this article. It said that in 2009, when you spent over $50,000, $50,000 in renovations, that they wanted you to change different things, that the company also told you to rebuild your compost shed, which was another $5,000. And you mentioned that that they told you that the shed had to be certified by the government inspector. But when you called the government inspectors, I assume that's USDA or whatever, they said that they didn't require any type of approval like that.
No, they did not require approval.
Okay. Now, going back, you mentioned that they told you that your chickens were smaller. They wasn't coming up to the standard of what they considered the weight of their chickens. You said that you had put the alarm out there to talk with some of these to see what was going on, and you caught the guys filling up the bins only halfway.
Right. And actually a white grower told me to do that. He told me, he said, when that truck comes, he said, you go down there and you bump that truck when it pull up to make sure it's full of feed. And you bump that truck when it leaves to make sure he left all your feed with you. So I did. So I went down there. That's when I put the alarm on the gate. So when the truck come, I jump on the four-wheel. I don't care what time of night it is, 2 o'clock in the morning. I run down there, and I take my rubber hammer, and I bump on that truck to make sure it's full. Then when he finished to get ready to pull out, I bump on that truck again to make sure he dumped all the feed. So this particular day, I got down there that night, and I bumped the truck, and it was full of feed. So one of the alarms went off in my chicken house, so I had to leave the truck and go to one of the houses and check the house out and everything. So once I got that checked out, the truck was leaving. So I just raced on my four-wheeler all the way up there to the almost to the road and stopped that truck. And I stopped that truck, and I bumped that truck, and he had a bin of feet still on it. I asked him, I said, why are you taking my feet? He said, it all wouldn't fit. I said, yeah, it'll fit. I said, turn that truck around and bring it all back down here. So I told the representative about that, and he said, you know, he just bumped it off the truck for an honest mistake. But he was, and what they was doing, they take that feet away from there, then your feed conversion is off, because you know they go by your feed conversion per how many pounds of chicken you produce. So if they take the feed, then it throws your feed conversion off. That means that you didn't produce enough weight for the amount of feed that you got.
Okay.
And that make you underproduce.
Let me take a few of these calls, Richard. Let's go to 405. 405, what's your name? Where you calling from? 405.
Yes, this is Don. I'm calling from Edmond, Oklahoma.
Don, could you turn your radio? Your volume is up. It's causing interference.
Can you hear me okay?
Turn your volume down. I hear you now. Go ahead. Go ahead, Don.
Hey. Yes, this is a typical pattern of how they treat our black farmers, chicken farmers, farmers in general. And I'm just sick and tired of it. I was an investigator out of Washington, D.C. I live in Oklahoma now at the time. And even when we went in to investigate, to ask for the records, for comparison records, they just shoved boxes of stuff disorganized to where you could not make heads or tails of what information they were giving you if you didn't have some prior investigative knowledge and know how to uncover the deceit that these people have. And these local
states. And that would be your company itself? That would be the company itself having these records in such a disarray that you wanted to investigate?
Yes. Yes, the we went into the loans that they have given or allegedly should have given to the farmers, and tried to uncover the disparities between the white farmers and the black farmers. But the records that we investigated, these companies give us, were not sufficient. And this was even with the USDA, the Department of Agriculture, those records, because, they were required to keep records under the president's executive orders at that time, had some teeth in it. But it's just a tragedy as to how we have been treated in this country and still today. And you've got individuals like Senator McConnell sitting up there talking about we've been paid reparations. But we need to get our reparations. That's what we need to do as a whole. Whatever reparations activities are going on, we need to get involved and demand reparations from this country so that we can have our own financial institutions to support our farmers out there.
Don, I agree with every word that you said. Don, you were investigated for what, USDA? Or what? Who did you were investigated?
I was working with a company that was out of Washington, D.C., that had a contract to investigate
cases of discrimination. Okay. Okay.
But, it was just difficult all the way around. Everything they did, that we had every hurdle, it was just like jumping hurdles in a race. Mm. You run so far and then there's a hurdle. Then you got to jump it, try to figure it out, how to get over this, obstacles rather. And it's a darn shame. And I commend the farmers for the tenacity to stick in there. And, now some farmers did get paid some money, but it was a nothing compared to what it costs to operate their farms, the equipment that they needed to have, and et cetera, et cetera. So I just commend you and your guests, you know, for, you know, exposing this these situations, and the fight continues. I'll never give up. I'm 74 years old, man. I'll never give up.
Don, I want to thank you for your work, and again, I support every word that you said, Don.
All right. Thank you very much, and I'll continue to listen.
Thank you, sir.
Take care now. Bye.
Let's go to 229. 229?
Yes, Eddie Slaughter, Gunner Vista, Georgia.
Mr. Slaughter, how are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. I was listening to all those farmers and everything, and a lot of farmers don't know it, but that was over $500 million so-called left over from the pig food that was not paid out, and they have been paying it out to all of these 501(c) organizations, and there's $8 million left still in that fund. And Shirley Sherrod and Gary Pinnick of Federation of Southern Cooperatives, Calvin King out of the Arkansas Land Development, John Board out of the National Black Farmers, all of them are on this board with lead counsel Al Pyres and Judge Paul Friedman. And I would like to get some of their email addresses and email them address and let them know that this money should not be distributed out to these 501(c) organizations, but they should be given out to the farmers that still have debt relief pending and other things and other debt pending, instead of throwing this money away with these technical assistance outreach programs to farmers, when in fact the money should be going actually to the farmers. And I wanted to send them this email and so that they can write in and voice their opinion, so that this money won't be swindled away like the last $90 million, I think, that they say that the lawyers got out of it. So if you could get some of the email address, or you can give them my email address. My name is Eddie Slaughter. My email address is eddieslaughter51@yahoo.com. That's eddieslaughter51@yahoo.com. And I'd be happy to send y'all this link. So the more opinions that we get are voiced on it, the harder it's going to be for them to throw this money away with these black organizations that do nothing but pimp their own folks instead of doing what's just, what's right by them. And this whole committee, there's no farmers on it, but it's over $8 million in it. And we have until the 19th to give a response and a reply to what they guide the best way to use that money, that $8 million. So it would be a good time for those farmers in Mississippi and other places to put in and voice their opinion on it. And I'd be happy to send y'all the information and the link. It's coming from Judge Paul Friedman, and it's also coming from lead counsel Al Pyres, David Frost, and all of them. So we got until the 19th that y'all can weigh in on it. And I'd be happy to send it to you, send a link to you. Thank you.
Mr. Ingram, did you get that email address?
It was, he said Eddie Slaughter what now?
Eddie Slaughter 51 at yahoo.com.
And that was EDDIESLAUGHTER Slaughter?
Yes, sir, 51 at yahoo.com. And what I'm going to do, there was an attorney out of Washington, D.C. named Tracy McCurdy, and she's the one who sent that email to me, and I'm just going to forward it on to you all. So even if you see her name on it, it'll be coming from me. I'm just going to forward to anybody that does it so that we can voice in and weigh on this $8 million. There ain't no sense in them throwing it away to black folks that ain't got no they don't have not one inch of farming in them. All they want to do is use their technical assistance and outreach. And they make their living not necessarily, you know, tilling the soil, but they always got these technical assistance and outreach to farmers, which benefit farmers not in the least. And they are saying that they think that that $8 million should go to them to keep the lights on in their organization so that they can keep supporting the black farmers, which, well, in fact, they do nothing to support them.
But when we was going through this thing,
there was people here in the state getting money from some black farmers organization. From, they said, supposed to be black farmers money coming from Washington, whatever. But these people was getting money. They were sending them out, I think, $50,000 a piece. And they was getting money, and they, some, these people were living in apartment complexes. They didn't even have a farm.
Well, and that was by design, sir. That's why we're kind of raising this flag now. This is by design. When they pay out all that money, it looked like you done paid farmers, when in fact you paid people that didn't have no farmer, no farm ID number, or had any kind of documentation that they ever did business with USDA. And that was to cover it up. See, out of the original Pickford complaint, the lawyers got over $300 million. Then Barack Obama came forward and he signed a $1.2 billion settlement. And we understand that they swandled that money away and just throwed it away, wasted, did a lot of fraud with it. And the lawyers end up with another $90 million. So, and you find out that most of the farmers, you know, actually did not receive any kind of justice whatsoever out of the Tim Pickford. And matter of fact, over here in Georgia and Alabama and Mississippi, most of us are worse off now than we were before the lawsuit. Because even a USDA Office of General Counsel, the lead counsel, the chief counsel was J. Michael Kelly. He made the statement back in 2000 that out of the first $631 million they paid out in $50,000 payments, 92% of everybody they paid did not have a farm ID number or any kind of documentation that they ever did business with USDA. And this is the reason why, when you looked at that consent decree, instead of it saying black farmers, the lawyers deliberately changed it to claimants. And claimants was that you could pay anybody that claimed that they attempted to farm, I asked for an application, denied a farm application, and they paid those people because that way they would not have to pay and return the land to the actual farmers. Most actual farmers that got the $50,000, they didn't get the debt relief. So what they did, they turned right around and started offsetting all of their Social Security benefits, all the income tax returns, you know, railroad pension. You know, if you filed to get your subsidy payments, they took those. And everything else. So what they did, this was the biggest sham that has been played on black farmers since slavery. The Pickford lawsuit was the biggest. They say it was supposed to be the biggest civil rights lawsuit in history in this country. And that was more waste, fraud, and abuse in that than anything that you could ever see. In the words of Frederick Douglass, that was enough crime to disgrace a nation of savages. Yep.
Mr. Slaughter, as always, I want to thank you for your contribution.
I just happened to get in and get your email in time to catch the last of your program. I wish I had a call to all of it, brother.
Well, I'll have it up on podcast so you can hear it all. And when you send me that information, I'm going to forward it out to other farmers that have emailed me in the past.
All right. Look, hold it. Before you get off, let me make sure I got your email address so that I can forward it on to you, too.
Well, I'll
call you back if I don't have it. Yeah.
Good. Okay.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Talk to you soon.
And Mr. Ingram, the thing that you know, Elliot, that Mr. Slaughter raised that is interesting to me. It's two interesting things that I think that we need to like unpack, and it may be difficult. And that is, who is these personalities that are making these decisions, either to, as you say, Mr. Ingram, that person who was the one came to each one of you farmers and basically did the setup. You know, I'm going to call it the setup for the banks, right? That's a particular person. Like, who is this person? Is he somebody who's been working with this company for a long period of time? Is he from my vantage point, is he just a blatant racist that recognized that his role is to put black farmers out of business? But then we go and hear about taking Elliot, you know, you always talk about the black conspirators, right? The
mm-hmm.
black people. But then it's the people who are in these bureaucracies who are actually obviously not doing no overseeing, using Mr. Slaughter's example. I mean, your job is to look to make sure that these are farmers instead of consultants. but you're not actually looking at that. And then, Mr. Ingram, you mentioned about that conference where Holder and others was there, and then they, you know, decide that when you needed them to, you know, for information support, that they're in a bureaucratic position and they're, you know, missing in action. But the question, saying all that, since this article came out, have there been any more traction about the situation with the company and the farmers that you've become aware of?
No.
You said no?
No, sir. Not mm-hmm. not one thing. Since all this stuff started, it sort of died down. When Obama got left out of office, it pretty much stopped. Mm-hmm. There was an attorney for the Department of Justice and the USDA that was working on this thing, and he has been working religiously on this thing for the last 6-7 years, just religiously. This man, he came to my house, he stayed at my house, and worked on. He had really, really worked on this thing. But then when Obama came, went out of office, it just stopped. It was almost like the new administration sort of rearranged everything. And if you realize in the article, it says that the Stockard, the Telaca Stockard stockyard in Atlanta, a USDA department, was dismantled. They took all those people that was investigating this thing, that was working on this thing for the last 7-8 years, and just moved them around to different departments so that they couldn't communicate and work on this thing. But this one attorney that they mentioned in the article, he has really been a soldier to work on this thing to try to get it to come to head, but
excuse me. Is the district that your farm is in and the farmers are in, would that be considered a predominantly black state district as far as population wise, or would it be a predominantly white political district?
In the area that the district that our farm, because all of our farm was pretty close together. They wasn't. Some of them wasn't even like my farm. Some of them wasn't even 5 miles apart.
Right. The population of that, just the voting population, would that be predominantly a black voting district or a white voting district?
Predominantly white.
And if I may, I don't know off the top of my head, how many state legislators are in Mississippi? Are you aware, with the proportion of black legislators that are in Mississippi, in the Mississippi legislative body?
No, I'm not aware.
You know, the only reason I'm raising that, Elliot, because it seemed like even though this, a lot of this work is being done by the federal, it seemed like in looking out for the interests of black farmers that any black legislators in the state would take up an interest of that because of the history.
Oh yeah, certainly. Even if they were out of the state, they would get behind it. Even use the bully pulpit to even talk about these things. You don't hear these people talking about these things. You hear all kind of political grandstanding, especially now. I mean, look at the two candidates that's running for this so-called highest office in the land. All you hear is grandstanding out of them. Booker and Harris. Come on. These issues that these men facing are real. Losing their life savings, losing their land, losing inheritance that they want to leave to their children. While all these other, and you can see it's a systematic type of thing, Richard. The banks is involved. These companies is involved. Lawmakers is involved. This man comes to a hearing with Holder and others there. One of the representatives of the government gives him her personal number and says, if you feel any retribution, call. Soon as he gets home, it's a letter saying you're done, and then he calls and gets no response. I read in the article that investigators were sent to this company about this situation, and they get the door slit shut in their face, so to speak. No response, closed doors. If things was open and they found out that somebody in their company was practicing discrimination, racial discrimination, it seems like they would say, well, wait a minute, we don't allow that, and expose the person. They seem like they're protecting these people.
Well, you know, in Mississippi, it's the largest agriculture producing of chickens in the United States. It's the largest area that chickens are produced. So these people have a lot of political power. Just like if you go back and research when Trump became president, some of his biggest donations came from the poultry industry.
We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, folks can get involved in this conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. When we come back, we got a call, our caller from New York that's on hold. We'll get right to him after the break with our guest, Mr. John Ingram, African-American farmer from Mississippi, talking about his dealings with Cook Foods and them trying to drive back farmers out of business and off of their land. We'll be right back after the break. Again, you can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. Well, wait a minute. I don't even have my break queued up. Let's do it like this. Let's go to our caller from New York. We'll go to the break after him, or maybe I'll, if he's lengthy with his questions, I'll hold him over, and then we'll go to the break. But let's go to him first. Let's go to 646-646.
Yeah, what's going on, Elliot, Richard, and your guest?
How are you,
sir? I got a couple of questions, but I need to start off with one thing. And this is something that I read the article, and it's really disturbing. Now, I would just like to know, did what happened to you, brother, happen to any white farmers?
Say that again.
What happened to you, did it happen to any white farmers?
Not that I know of.
So then that would seem that black farmers, if they're the only ones that this happened to, was targeted for this to happen, and I would surmise to get a hold of your land, because if your land was foreclosed, has the land been sold, or has the land been picked up by anybody else to do chicken farming on it?
It's been sold.
And the person that purchased the land, are they doing chicken farming on it?
Person that purchased my farm, he is a poultry. He's a poultry grower, a white farmer.
Oh man!
So that right there tells you that is.
Wait a minute, Jack. Go ahead, Mr. Ringer.
But he don't grow chickens on my property. He don't grow chickens on my property. But the purchaser of it is, he has a poultry farm, so you know he don't grow chickens. I assume that when he bought my property, he bought it so he can get the equipment and stuff out of the chicken houses. I don't know, because he don't grow chickens in my farm. The guy that bought it is a white poultry farmer. Mm.
Oh, man. Just,
well, Jay, do me a favor. I'm going to hold you on. I'm going to hold you to after the break. We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll continue the conversation.
All right, Daniel.
With our guests, and I'll bring you back on. We're going to take a brief break. You can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Time for Awakening. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening, Time for an Awakening, with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
At the very same time that America refused to give the Negro any land, through an act of Congress, our government was giving away millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest, which meant that it was willing to undergird its white peasants from Europe with an economic floor. But not only did they give the land, they built land-grant colleges with government money to teach them how to farm. Not only that, they provided county agents to further their expertise in farming. Not only that, they provided low interest rates in order that they could mechanize their farms. Not only that, today many of these people are receiving millions of dollars in federal subsidies not to farm, and they are the very people telling the black man that he ought to lift himself by his own bootstraps. Now, this is what we are faced with. And this is the reality. Now, when we come to Washington in this campaign, we are coming to get our check. And I come here tonight and plead with you. Believe in yourself and believe that you're somebody. As I said to the group last night, nobody else can do this for us. No document can do this for us. No Lincolnian Emancipation Proclamation can do this for us. No Kennisonian or Johnsonian Civil Rights Bill can do this for us. If the Negro is to be free, he must move down into the inner resources of his own soul and sign with the pen and ink of self-assertive manhood his own Emancipation Proclamation. Don't let anybody take your manhood. Be proud of our heritage. As somebody said earlier tonight, we don't have anything to be ashamed of. Somebody told a lie one day. They couched it in language. They made everything black, ugly, and evil. Look in your dictionary and see the synonyms of the word black. It's always something degrading and low and sinister. Look at the word white. It's always something pure, high, and clean. But I want to get the language right tonight. I want to get the language so right that everybody here will cry out, yes, I'm black, I'm proud of it, I'm black and beautiful.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening, and we're joined in conversation this evening. It's 8:23 in the city of Philadelphia. We're in conversation this evening with Mr. John Ingram, activist and black farmer out of Mississippi. Mr. John Ingram is talking about his relationship with Cook Foods, which is one of the largest. It's a $1 billion company. It's one of the largest poultry producers. And let me read this for the listening audience that missed it earlier. Cook Foods is based outside of Chicago and supplies chicken to restaurants, often sold under other brands to major restaurants, retailers such as Burger King, Kroger's, Walmart. This is a $3.1 billion company. It's something that I'm going to say later on in reference to this, because it's things that we can do as African-Americans that are not farmers to help this situation. Let's go back to our caller. Mr. Ingram, you still with us?
Yes, sir.
Good. Let's go back to New York City and Jay. Go ahead, Jay.
Yeah, Brother Ingram, now, I just like to know, you lost basically everything, right? What are you doing now to sustain yourself and your family?
I'm working at a local car dealership.
Now you done had to go back and get a job. And your credit is destroyed. You're not going to be able to basically leave anything to your children. And, you know, I just like to know, what could we as a, in a sense, community do? And, you know, do you expect, honestly, any type of regress from these evil individuals? Because I know the brother in the that was in the article with you, he was talking about he can't work, he on food stamps, but, you know, he keep putting it in the hand of the Sky Daddies. He getting up and going to church every Sunday. You know, I don't relate to that, bro. I think the individual that was the one who basically did this to all of y'all farmers, he should go see the Sky Daddy. You know, I think that would be God's will. I think God would want you, if there was really a God, to deal with somebody like that in a real biblical way and send him up there to see him. Because that man, from what it seems, from everything that you're saying, he targets you and every other black farmer that he could be able to get to go along with becoming chicken farmers to basically do one thing to you, to take your land. He didn't want to help you at all. He didn't want to do anything. He systematically targeted you, Mr. Ingram, and the other brothers to take your land. You know what I mean? And yeah. He shouldn't be able to wake up in the morning and feed his family. He shouldn't be able to. And I'm going to say this to you, and you may understand it, and you may not understand it. Until we handle people like him in the fashion in which the South Africans dealt with those who did them dirty with burning neckties, we're going to be in this position continuously. Because you're not going to be the only one. There's going to be others. And I don't, and you know, I'm sorry to say this. I respect what you did. I know what you must feel like. But the thing is, until you really want to do the Lord's work and deal with this individual and what he's done to our people, hey, bro, you can't expect anything. Because they done showed you the government is not going to help you. The government's not going to give you no redress. The Koch brothers don't give a F about you. And that slob that did this to you, he walking around trying to find the next black person he could do this to. So yep. I wish you the best of luck. And I hurt for you, brother. Because when I read the article, I'm going to be a man and I'm going to say this. After I read the article, I cried. Because what they did to y'all was totally wrong. And I'm saying that based on, you know, the average person that's going to read it not going to understand what was done to you.
But Jay, isn't that as a principle that you enunciate something that every one of us, you said you cried. Isn't that something every one of us should be contemplating? I mean, you know, I'm just trying to expand and take it out of a personal, and I understand the context, but because what they're experiencing is really, I mean, Elliot just played Dr. King's speech. Well, isn't that was what, in the 60s?
Mm-hmm.
That was during the March of the 60s. And he was laying out, he laid out really what Mr. Ingram and him experienced in 2000. So it ain't systemically, this ain't no new thing. So the principle that you're raising, it's not just about Mr. Ingram, it's about us until we do that. And that's the only thing
until we deal with a person who did this in the fashion in which we really need to, then it's just going to happen again, unfortunately, because what was done to them was systematic. It was done deliberately in a sense.
But that ain't new thing, though. That's the point I'm making.
No. What I'm saying to you is, it's a new thing. You know why, Elliot?
No, it's
because
not.
Because most people couldn't even that what was done to them was something that could be done to them. People don't believe that what happened to these people would be something, and I'm just going to say it, that the white man would do to us in this day and age. People don't relate to the fact that this man absolutely took advantage of just because he's black. people don't look at it in those honest terms, Brother Richie.
One of the reasons that they don't, Jay, is because a lot of our people don't know. And listen, Jay, thank you. I want to touch on some of the things that you mentioned.
All right, have a good one.
But I want you to keep listening because I want to touch on some of the things that you talked about with Mr. Ingram. One of the reasons that they don't, Richard, is because they don't know about it. The majority of our people, they don't know about what's happening with Mr. Ingram. They don't know about what's happening to the other black farmers. And the majority of our people, I hate to say, or a large percentage of our people, only start focusing in on farmers when they heard about that lawsuit that Mr. Slaughter and them kind of fostered. And just in case you didn't know, Mr. Ingram, that gentleman that called Eddie Slaughter was one of the named plaintiffs in that Pickford versus Glickman lawsuit. Him and Lucius Abrams and eight other men. So the reason that's not known is because a lot of these things our people don't know about. But let me mention something, because I want to, in the last 20, 25 minutes of the program, I want to try to focus in on some possible solutions for this. Because I heard you mention, Mr. Ingram, that after several of the men had lost their farms, that they all, and Richard, that tells me something, and I know you caught it, Richard, that the Mr. Ingram said when the other men had lost their farms, they tried to rally around the one man that still had his farm, Mr. Sanders. Did you hear him when he said that, Richard?
Yeah.
So, see, those things are clues to who we are as a people. But let me say something for all of us. And when I say all of us, I'm talking about people that are not farmers. This Cook Foods is a large company, a large poultry producer in this country, over $3 billion. Now, according to this published report, it says Cook Foods, along with the other top companies, Tyson, Pilgrim's Pride, Sanderson Farms, and Purdue, are the three big boys, or the four big boys in this country. Now, I don't have anything in front of me, but I don't doubt that these other companies, Tyson, Purdue, and all the rest of them, is doing something similar to Cook Foods to African-American farmers. If that's the case, then stop. For example, I read earlier that Cook Foods sells to, and I just read it, and I don't know, oh, here it is. Cook Foods sells to, and is sold under other brand names. It wouldn't take much for our people to find out the other brand names that this Cook Food sells under, and sells chicken to Burger King, Kroger's, Walmart. Our people consume a lot of chicken in this country. Stop buying from these places. Stop buying from the places that Cook Food distributes their chicken to. Stop buying it. If you want chicken, try to search some black farmers that are still producing their own chicken, or buy from somebody else. But stop buying this chicken that Cook Foods sends to these other companies. Find out the other names that Cook Foods uses to distribute their chickens and stop buying from them. That's one thing we can do, that we can all do to
That's
help
exactly
these men.
That's exactly what we need to do. You know, when this happened to me, you know, a lot of people say why we didn't do this, and we should have done this, and we should have done that. But I sit down I wrote letters to Tyler Perry. I wrote letters to Oprah Winfrey. I wrote letters to every TV show, black TV show, or people that was in reporting business that I could think of, and never got a response from nobody. And then they say, well, why y'all didn't do this, or y'all should have done this? I have lawyers that call me now and say, well, we should have done this and we should have done that. But if a man got his foot on your neck, there's only two choices you got at that time. You could either choke out or tap out. If you tap out, you live to fight another day. And that's what we chose to do. We just tapped out because there was nothing we could do, because we didn't have anybody that was offering us any kind of help. You know, the reason that we
we rallied behind Mr. Sanders, the one that you mentioned that's in the article with me, is because his farm was larger than the other three farmers put together. His farm was larger than my farm and the other two farms put together. So we did everything. We said, you know, we knew that some of us were going to be collateral damage, but we tried to help him go farther, and he did. He went farther a few years, you know, after we did, but it ended up the same way by the same person. So, you know, I hear a lot of people say what we should do, what we should have done, but when a man got his foot on your neck, there's nothing you could do but end up like we was homeless.
But you know, Mr. Ingram, one thing that you can, your experience can help us as far as, and those who are possibly listening, considering to be future farmers and even future poultry farmers. So, you know, so I wanted to raise this, you know, as towards Elliot's solution. Based off of the experience you have now, and all these things being true, what would you advise someone who, a young black person or a black person going into the poultry business in Mississippi, what would you advise them to do to possibly secure and solidify their position, recognizing they're going to deal with the company of Cook? How would you see now to play that, that they should approach that?
I one of the things that I see, you know, hindsight to see that what we did, what we that could have helped us if we could have got more publicity people like you guys and somebody out there, because you know a lot of times, you know, when people discriminate and you turn the light on, they sort of back off. And so if someone, you know, I would even tell my kids to never give up on your dream of being a farmer, to keep on trying to be a farmer, but keep the light on to that somebody is helping you and got an eye out there, or can put it on Front Street or on the news or wherever it's got to be, so that these people will sort of back off of you a little bit, because discrimination, a lot of times it's in the heart of a person. And so that's what I feel, that's what I was happening with this guy. I feel that this guy, it was in this guy's heart to discriminate against us. And even to the point to where he told me one day, and everything he threw at me, I was trying to combat it. I was trying to deal with it. And he told me, he said, Mr. Ingram, he said, I'm impressed with you. He said, I'm impressed with you. I said, in which way are you impressed with me? And he says, everything we tell you to do, you try to do it. I said, well, what else other choice I got? But I think what he was saying was that he was impressed because of my endurance, that I wouldn't give up.
And before you go to Nicola, the thing that I take from what you're saying, Mr. Ingram, is that besides, you know, keeping the light on, that a person like that, a person going into the farming and recognizing, you know, that there is a person like that, that they have to be removed in order for your business to be able to go forward. I mean, yes. Because if it's in their heart, then, you know, it's nothing you can do, and they already have the position. So as an offensive measure, as a business offensive measure, we would have to get rid of that kind of person. We would have to identify them early and remove them quickly from that position in order to make our business be able to have some level of success. Is that what?
That's exactly what I'm saying. You would have to have a team of people that could help you, you know, just like now, you know, if we, had the avenues that we have now by us talking to Elliot and us talking to, you know, Republic to put this out there and CNN News and all these places, that I really believe that they would have backed off, you know. But the way that they set it up and the way that they handled it, they picked us off one at a time. It wasn't like it's a big issue where you just got a grower that's not living up to par, that's not producing up to par, so we got rid of it. Well, but they got rid of us one at a time for the exact same thing, even to the point to where the things that they told us that we had to do and that literally forced us out of business. And when the Department of Justice came down on them and in a meeting over in Alabama, they told the lawyer for the Department of Justice that that wasn't a requirement. It was only an option. Mm-hmm. But when they gave it to us in a letter, it said, this is what you got to do to keep growing chickens. They didn't give us no option. Mm-hmm. But so they held us out to the banks literally just foreclosed on us. And then they said, when the Department of Justice pointed out that they didn't require some of the white growers to do these things, but that was just an option. They didn't have to do that. Really? I mean, you think, well, we'll be foreclosed on an option? You know, at the time, it wasn't an option. They told us we had to do it. That was a requirement, even to the point to where, and I'm going to tell you two things that to let you know how much hatred was in his heart. Was even to the point to where I gave up. I went to trying to sell my place. I put my place out on the market for sale. Had a buyer, a guy from Florida, was trying to buy my farm. He told them that not to buy my farm because I had let my farm run down so bad. Well, keep in mind, my farm wasn't run down because I never wanted to be in the chickens business in the first place. They the one got me into it. So everything I did to it was improving it. But they told him that he didn't want the farm. They wasn't, you know, that he didn't want the farm because it was run down. So when I tried to get another bank, they told the bank my contract will end. So in other words, letting them know we're not going to put chickens out there for him. Well, then when I tried to sell the place, they even deterred the guy from buying it because the only reason he was going to buy it because he thought he could grow chickens too. And even, you know, those kind of issues like that really let me know that it was really about the property, you know. You know, just get the property out of our hand.
Ms. Ingram, I would only differ in the point of not about the property, because they already had the property. You bought the property and was already abandoned. It's getting you guys out of the business utilizing that property. And when we lose sight, especially in a state like Mississippi, in a state that has a history of doing this, of securing their political, as you said, the political and economic power of the notorious South. It's not about the land. They, you know, it's about who controls the land. And even when they're saying, I don't want this person from Florida, I don't even want you to get paid off of it.
Yeah. And even after that happened, a lot of young folks have came to me and they said that they had, you know, tried to get into the chicken business with Cook, and all of them was denied.
A young black people?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Let me grab this one call, and we got about 15 minutes left. Let's go to 757. 757?
Hello, are you there?
Yes, sir.
I'm going to try to be as diplomatic as I can. Mr. Ingram, I understand your plight, and I'm going to try to go through this quickly, and I'll hang on in case you have any answers. I really think sometimes we think we are listening. But I can tell you this from losing 30 acres and spending 3 years with my father, and I talked about it on the show when I first started calling in. What happened to Mr. Ingram is not just the bigot who was communicating with him. It is a system of bankers, brokers, insurance agents, lawyers,
okay,
judges, the people that control that entire area that he's in. And I'm going to say this as nicely as I can. Mr. Ingram tried to do as much as he could. Where we falter as a people is I can almost guarantee you there were prominent lawyers and other people in social positions with black faces that did not put their careers and positions on the line to help him get what he needed, because they understand the global and the monopoly that's put on people. I heard a couple of callers make some things, armchair and quarterback, about what could be done. I literally stopped the sale of my father's property. And once I beat them in a court in the county that we live in, it went to the state, and the state assigned it to Gloucester County just across the river. When I stood up in court to defend my father, the judge gave me a summation and told me, you had a chance to run your mouth in York County, but over here, I run this. Sit down, boy. And I'm going to tell you this. What he experienced is what we won't realize as a people. This is not a person. It is a system. Just like what's going on with the Stein seed, when they found out that the people that they were getting that seed from, somebody might be in Indiana, Georgia, California. These people have family connections, societal connections, that you think you're dealing with people that are, quote, disconnected from each other, and you find out that the racial racism in this country is from sea to shining sea.
Mm-hmm.
That stranger that walks in the courtroom and claims that he's neutral might be third generation connected to somebody that's right there in your county, because that's what wealth does. I'm going to leave it there, but I'm going to ask you two gentlemen again. You run this show, and I'm not going to say it on air. If you find the time to call me and talk to me, I can show you records that will tell you what you may not know. Mr. Ingram was not just a victim of a bigot where he lives. That bigot had connections all through every part of that system that allowed that company to do that to him. And it's happening. I told you, I went to New Iberia, Louisiana. What you're talking about now is also happened all over Louisiana, Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, South Carolina, and Virginia. I know it for a fact. And my heart goes out to you, but until we as a people stop this self-striving for self and seeing no connection, what you people talk about all the time, until we understand that we have to stand and be uncomfortable defending people like him, then we are not going to be able to fight this thing. I'll leave it there.
All right, hear, hear.
Thank you, as always, for your contribution, Brother Otis. Ms. Ingram, let me, in the time that we have remaining, let me try to focus in on some banter around some solutions. I mentioned earlier about our people identifying some of these other names that Cook Food distributes its products under, and stop purchasing from these retailers, and stop purchasing chicken that Cook Food produces. And that's something that practical things that every black person can do if they want to help our farmers. But let me read this. And this came from a site that talks about poultry consumption by nations in the world. It says the U.S. is the largest consumer of poultry products in the world. As a result, it is also one of the major producers and exporters of poultry. The export markets are around the globe for American poultry. Now, the reason I'm saying this, we just seen some incidents on the continent where the different countries in the continent is forming trade agreements, going under, trying to go under one currency, and they're reaching out to getting just a little bit of I think you might have your volume up in the background, Mr. Ingram. Just turn it down just a little bit. Just cause a little feedback.
Okay.
Great. And we see now a new attitude or a new understanding starting to happen among our people here and on the mother continent about working with our people in the diaspora. I was looking at a site talking about the best countries that consume a lot of chicken on the continent of Africa. Ethiopia is number one. Ghana is ranked number two. Nigeria is number three. It says Nigeria's population is approximately 170 million people. Tanzania is number four with 50 million people. Then it has other countries with the honorable mentions like Uganda and Angola and Mozambique. It's countries on the continent that consume chicken and import chicken. They import chicken from the United States. They import chicken from the United States with companies that discriminate and drive black farmers out of business that produce chicken. Is it possible? And I'm just asking you this off the cuff, and you might not know, but do you think it's feasible where African-American producers of poultry, of vegetables, livestock can start negotiating some type of terms where we can do international trade with our mother continent? Other people do it. You got Asians that live here in the United States that do trade with either Japan or China. Other nationalities do it. Europeans do it with their different countries in Europe, whether it's Italy, France, England. They do it. Ireland. In fact, we had a mayor here that went and this mayor here in Philadelphia went and made an agreement with this Irish airline company to start flying to using their airline from Ireland to fly here to Philadelphia. So they do it all the time. It's time for our lawmakers to stop all this political grandstanding, playing around, fooling around in white supremacy, and start dedicating themselves to helping their people. Because if these other companies can do trade agreements with the lands of their nativity, we can do the same thing with our continent. It's people there that consume chicken. And I bet you that Coke Foods does business in Africa after they discriminate here against farmers here in this country and drive them off their property. And I just want to make mention to you, Mr. Ingram, to just get your opinion on it.
Well, I think, you know, right now with Cook Food and here, they do not have any black growers. I think that we as black people needs to realize that we shouldn't do business with anybody that don't do business with us. We, you know, if they don't feel that we're good enough to grow their chicken, then they shouldn't feel good enough for us to eat their chicken. You know, we shouldn't do business with anyone that won't do business with a black businessman. And you know, yes, I think that we could grow an industry to produce our own product and sell our own product. You know, whether someone, you know, would make that investment or not is a different story. Because, like I said, I tried to contact a lot of people and never got a response from no one.
Well, one thing I see and hear, you know, in the Elliot, and I do agree that, you know, those two tactical approaches of not buying and in trading with Africa. But one thing that I heard Mr. Ames say that there were young farmers, you know, or potential poultry farmers that approached them. I think that's a good start on the side, because on this side of the production side, because you need, y'all already had farms and knew the kind of equipment, this type of land, the type of process that needed. And young people, as you mentioned earlier, Elliot, in a lot of cases, we don't know. And you also, Mr. Ingram, you have experience of how to deal with that business. And I think that it's important to cultivate those young entrepreneurs and minds in relationship to that, because that helps in being able to create a base that could be able to do the trade part, at least with the continent. But right now, if the farmers are being run out of business and the land is being hijacked from them, then it's important that we are able to put, you know, new faces and new people on the game board, not necessarily to play with cooked foods, but to be able to play in the game of being able to supply food product, and in this case, chickens.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Ingram, you got time for one more call?
Yes, sir.
Richard,
yes, sir.
Richard, we got about five more minutes. Let's go to 602. 602?
Yes, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, and good evening to the guests.
How are you, sir?
Brother Marcus. I'm doing all right, good brother. One problem with that, though, with the exporting the chicken, is they're doing that now. The U.S. exports chicken to, you know, different countries, Jamaica, Africa. But what they do, they undercut the local farmer there, too. Mm-hmm. See, because the chicken, they sell the chicken cheaper than the local farmer there in the country. So what we actually need is for the black farmer to take that technology to Africa and develop the industry there. See, so we outproduce them and undercut them. See, we sell, if they're selling chicken at $4, we sell it at $3. See, we sell it. So that's the way we got to do the technology transfer. You see, mm-hmm. and take that technology to Africa and do mass production in that way. But that's the problem they're doing right now. I mean, in Jamaica, they import chicken from America, and that destroy the local market. You see, because the people go to the market, they go to the supermarket and buy, oh, I can get the chicken cheaper here. You see, so that stifle the growth. But we take the skill set and bring it to the motherland. Ain't no way they can compete with us. Anyway, good brothers, thank you so much for this program. Very informative. Thank you.
Thank you for your contribution, sir.
All right, good brothers.
Let's go to 267. 267. 267. Let me put them back on hold. Mr. Ingram, listen, I want to thank you for being on with us. The door is always... I think we lost Mr. Ingram. Oh, my goodness. Richard, I think his call dropped.
No.
Ah, boy. I want to thank Mr. Ingram for being with us. I'm going to reach out to him for some updates in the future. His name, his number is going to be in my Rolodex, so to speak. They don't have Rolodex no more, Richard, but his name going to be in my phone. And also, the other gentleman that was in the article, if any of our listeners have read that article, Mr. Sanders, have contacted me. He told me that he was going to a meeting in Washington, D.C., that he was going to be on tonight, but he had a meeting in D.C. around the same issue. So hopefully maybe he'll reach out, and when he gets back, and he might have some more information, being that he was the last man standing down there that they drove out of business. He probably has a few more things. And plus, he had been in business 20 years, where Mr. Ingram said that he had just got into business at that time. I think it was 2005 right. when he got it started in the business. So these problems are ongoing, Richard, but there are solutions for us. One of the things I noticed of what he said, Richard, is that he think he could have got help if a lot of people knew what was going on. And he made mention that some of these news agencies and all that had reached out to him, and he you know, he mentioned about this program. But that's what we've been saying all along, Richard, that when they changed that act, that Telecommunications Act, because of what had happened, and I know that it was directly related to black radio rallying people to go to that Million Man March. When they changed that law and allowed these multi-million dollar conglomerates to buy up all these stations that had heretofore reserved for what they considered minority or black people to buy these stations. And they brought all these stations up and then syndicated all these stations in black cities and put all this giggling and laughing on during the daytime and satires and Amos and Andy and all that type of stuff. They knew what they were doing to keep information from the minds and hearts of black people. So that's why, you know, we do what we do to try to bring some of these stories to the forefront, to let our people know what's going on, to let us people know what we're up against, and we can start developing solutions to fight. Think tanks in these cities can hear these issues and others and start developing solutions so we can battle against this. A couple of things I remembered in the conversation with Mr. Ingram, that young people, young black people were still coming to him asking about getting involved in farming. That's an excellent sign, Richard.
Yeah.
They're not discouraged. But the thing is, I believe that some of these young people that's going to get involved not, might not make the same mistakes that some of the other men made. And I'm not trying to categorize anything that they did as mistakes. But they'll learn from their elders and take another path. I'll put it like that.
Right.
And some of the things we're talking about might be the path they take. That's going to be the path for our salvation. I know that. Working with one another is the path for our salvation. Before we leave true this evening. Say that again? I'm sorry.
I said true that.
Okay. Before we leave this evening, I just want to give our lineup Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., African Perspectives with Brother Oshi. Always interesting dialogue on African perspectives. From 1 to 3 on Mondays and Wednesdays, Black People's Matrix with Brother Franklin Jones. From 6 to 8 on Monday evening, Acres of Diamonds with Brother Jihad Ahmed. And every other Monday, their program was last Monday, so it'll be every other Monday during the month, Conversation Reparations and Cobra's program is on from 9 until 10 on Mondays on Time for an Awakening. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10 on Time for an Awakening. On Wednesday, Revive with Sister POC from 8 to 10 on Time for an Awakening. On Thursdays, 7 to 8, Relationships with Joy on Troy on Time for an Awakening Media. And on Fridays, Time for Awakening is back with myself and Brother Richard from 8 to 10 on Time for an Awakening Media. Starting tomorrow night from 10 to 12, the Warren Valentine Show will be ahead on Time for Awakening from 10 to 12 on Time for an Awakening. And before we go, Brother Ingram is back. Mr. Ingram?
Yes, sir.
Listen,
I'm sorry, my phone dropped the call.
No problem. We want to thank you for being on with us this evening to talk about your story. The door is always open for you to come back if any more information that you want to share. I know I did talk with Mr. Sanders, and he said that he was going to be in Washington, I think this weekend. So he might want to come on and maybe mention a few things that you didn't cover. But believe me, you have a friend with myself and Brother Richard and this program. So anytime you want to talk about some things, talk about what's going on in your area, or talk about your activism around black farmers, the door is always open.
You know, one of the things that we could probably do, if we had some, more financial, you know, the banks that finance these farmers, because a lot of the issues, just like me and Mr. Sanders, you know, the companies sort of put you in a position where it forces you into foreclosure, and then they just wait because they know eventually the bank's going to just foreclose on you. And so one of the things that could help the farmers out there is if they had some better financing options.
Yeah. Well, we'll hopefully we can get into some of that. Check out your email, too, or email Mr. Slaughter at the, and he always has valuable information. Like I said before, okay, he was one of the named plaintiffs on that Pickford versus Glickman. So he'll have some information that can help in some of the things that you might be talking about.
Okay.
But again, the door is always open to you, and I'll be in touch.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Take care now.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware. I know the things that they'll soon have to take care of. Children, soon it will be their turn to try and save the world. Right now they seem to play such a small part of.
Save the children.